Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. The show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey guys, welcome to episode 9 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Before we get into the show, I just wanted to let you guys know that if over the last few weeks my voice has been kind of low energy, I apologize for that. You know, it's really important that I put out good things into this world and I create good, uplifting, positive things and send out good vibrations. And if I'm honest, I've been kind of burnt out over the past month or so, burnt out in a bunch of different ways. It's entirely my own fault. I wasn't keeping my eye on, I didn't have my finger on the pulse of my energy levels. And I think I just pushed too far physically and it started to manifest in my other projects like the podcast. And I was really upset when I realized what had happened because, again, you guys are important to me and I want to put out good stuff that makes your lives better and lifts you up, not drags you down. So I apologize if I sound kind of low energy recently. Anyway, back on track now. I've got a fantastic guest, Chris Matakas, who is what I consider a jiu-jitsu philosopher. He's got a few really great books out, which I haven't read, but a bunch of people contacted me and said, Nick, you got to have this guy on the show. He thinks about jiu-jitsu in a very unique way. And after speaking to him on this episode, I found out that that definitely is the case. He's got a fantastic way of looking at the art, and I know you guys are going to enjoy this. So here we go. Episode 9, Chris Matakas. Enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. I have a special guest for you today. His name is Chris Matakas, who is a Greek brother, a Greek Jiu-Jitsu brother. There's not too many of us around. I know a few like Danny Prokopos and Pete the Greek out in Chicago, but it's a relatively small Venn diagram of Greek people who do Jiu-Jitsu, and it's an even smaller Venn diagram of Greek people who do jiu-jitsu and who have written books about jiu-jitsu, and Chris Matakas happens to be one of those people in that little center point. So it's really cool to have him here. Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is an absolute pleasure.
For sure, bud. So, you know, Chris, I'm going to be straight up with the audience. I don't know you and I haven't read any of your books, but the reason I wanted to have you on is because two very cool people in my life, people whose opinions I really do respect, they said to me, one of the people said, man, I was shocked by how good this book was. And he's not someone to say something like that just lightly. And so I thought, okay, I got to get this guy on the show. And another buddy of mine said, you need to speak to Chris Matakas because he's just got a great outlook on life and he's just a very chilled out, cool dude. So I sent you a message and you very graciously agreed to come on. And that's awesome, dude. I'm really happy to have you on. I guess the best thing to do is start by asking you a little bit about your background, both general and jiu-jitsu specific.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great. So first off, it's an honor to be here. This is really, really awesome. So I appreciate the opportunity. So I basically graduated college May 17th, 2008, with a degree in exercise science. And basically, I graduated college and realized that I was still a boy and I needed some sort of huge test to, help me move on to the next phase in life. And sure enough, Professor Ricardo Almeida ran a jiu-jitsu school a couple blocks from my childhood home. And just a pure happenstance, I signed up a week later, and that's what I've been doing ever since. And it's been the best 10 years of my life.
Oh man, that's cool to hear. So you're a black belt in jiu-jitsu now, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so now you said something interesting to me. You said you finished college and you're still a boy. Now, what was the event which made you say, "Hey, I'm still a boy. I'm not yet a man."
Yeah. So I graduate college and you're thrown out into the real world, and I realized that, you know, growing up, you always had this idea that the adults had all the answers. And then when I became an adult, I realized that I didn't have any answers. And I knew almost even less than when I started, it seemed like. So I recognized that I needed some sort of rite of passage or a ritual just to purposefully suffer and grow in a way that our culture doesn't always offer. And jiu-jitsu turned out to be the absolute best vehicle with which to achieve that aim.
Interesting. Yeah, something that a lot of modern thinkers, guys like Rogan and Aubrey Marcus and Duncan Trussell, they often speak about the fact that masculinity or men are undergoing a crisis in the West because we forgo that ritual that creates that crystallization of your psyche into from boyhood into manhood, or that marks the transfer of boyhood into manhood. And I guess jiu-jitsu is definitely used for that. In particular, what was it? Was it your competitive experiences, or was it just like sparring, or was anything particular? Was it a single event or a series of specific events that you found were that ritual for you, or was it just the general 10 years of being in the lifestyle?
Yeah, I would say, honestly, it's the lifestyle. I competed, I fought amateur MMA a little bit, and all those were very worthwhile experiences, but more so the daily striving toward a worthy ideal. You know, jiu-jitsu, it's infinite. And no matter how great we get or, you know, how skilled we become in even one particular aspect of it, we can never really glimpse all of it. And I recognized that pretty early on, but I saw that, you know, my growth as a martial artist reflected my growth as a human being. And I noticed that the harder I worked on my guard passing, the kinder and more loving I became. So I sort of took that as, I'm going to use jiu-jitsu as a vehicle to mold myself so I can have as much as possible to offer other people.
Wow, that's very interesting. So one of the things I've been struggling with, Chris, I'm going to give it to you straight up. Yeah, I've been struggling with, I really like that idea, and I've tried to do it myself, but I'm at the point now where I'm finding that my body is actually starting to give out.
Yes.
And I'm not even an old man. I'm like 37, right? And I'm just realizing that the rate limiting step in my desire to like do jiu-jitsu is my ability to heal and recover. And I guess where I'm going with this is, like, let's say hypothetically speaking, you couldn't train from next week. Just for whatever reason, your body just, something happened, catastrophic injury, or you couldn't train. How would you still get that kind of growth? Like you said, the more I work on my guard passing, the more I become a loving and kind person. So let's say the guard passing wasn't there anymore. What would you do? How would you find that?
I love that. It's an amazing question. And to be perfectly honest, I'm 31, but I am a 31-year-old old man as well. I don't really think you can, you know, achieve any form of high-level technical ability in jiu-jitsu without really breaking your body down in the process. At least it seems to be the commonality between all of us. But to answer your question, I would say I would just teach. You know, I love teaching. And I think we all want something with which we can contribute to the people around us. And yes, you can grow a lot as a practitioner, but you can grow just as much as a teacher. Certainly, while teaching, you learn the technique in a way that you're not going to learn if you're just drilling and practicing on your own. When you have to consciously explain the things you do unconsciously, it really does force your understanding of it. So I would teach, and you know, even if my body breaks down and I can't train, we've still developed enough knowledge that could be useful to other people. So I would still find a lot of value in just giving that knowledge out as much as we can and helping that next generation to become the next group of teachers.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting that you speak about teaching, because, you know, I look, we all have our neuroses, we all have our psychological issues and our ideas of who we should be, and we all hold on to those. And for me, I've held on for a long time to the idea that I think just jiu-jitsu naturally, especially when you're one of the better guys or one of the talented guys and you progress quickly, there's this expectation that's not only placed on you by jiu-jitsu, but that you put upon yourself. And that expectation is you got to be a tough guy. You got to be like untappable. You got to be like winning competitions. You got to be winning medals. You got to be like, if some dude walks in off the street into the gym you're teaching at or the gym you own, you got to be able to bust this dude up, you know? And it's like, I find for me, I'm trying really, really hard to, you know, I really, one of the things I love about jiu-jitsu is that it's real. You know, it's such a real thing. Like you can't fake it. You can't bullshit your way through jiu-jitsu. Like it either works or it doesn't. You either have the skill or you don't. You either have the ability or you don't. But it's getting to the point now where I'm kind of just hanging on physically, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So for example, like it's cool. I can, my blue and purple belt students or the average blue and purple belt student, I can teach them a lot and it's awesome. And like, no problem whatsoever. And I enjoy teaching them, but then the aspect of it is, the other aspect that I'm finding I'm struggling with is like, let's say a 250 pound brown belt comes to the academy where I'm teaching. And I'm like, okay, so are my students going to think that if I don't spar with this dude, that I'm not real? And more importantly, am I going to think that if I don't spar with this dude, I'm not real?
Yes. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? And because I set a very high standard for myself. I'm very hard on myself. And I really, it's almost that I don't want to disrespect jiu-jitsu and I don't want to dilute jiu-jitsu. And, you know, I sell products. I sell teaching products and teaching materials. And, man, if I don't train for like a few days, I say to myself, Nick, you're being a fraud. You're selling products to people about jiu-jitsu and you're not training. Or if let's say, hypothetically speaking, that 100-kilogram guy walks into the class, that big brown belt guy, I almost feel this pressure on me, like I've got to go and fight with this dude.
Yeah.
And the problem is, like, I don't mind getting beaten up, but then if I do that too often, my body gets fucked up and then I can't teach.
Yeah.
And then it starts a down spiral. So I'm basically just looking for insights on how people like yourself deal with stuff like this.
Yeah, that's an amazing question. I think every head instructor or school owner goes through something very similar, especially as we age and start to accumulate injuries. But I always view things as, you know, what is my relation in the context of the whole? And I think, you know, we all play different roles in the jiu-jitsu community. Like you are a public educator and a thinker. And that is a very important role that you play. You know, you're an organ within the body of jiu-jitsu. And I look at like my good friends, Gary Tonin or Gordon Ryan, you know, they have a very distinct role in the jiu-jitsu community. They're going to compete. They're going to further the development of the art in that way. And for me, you know, I love training and competing was fun when I did it. And yeah, you love those hard training sessions with the new stud that comes into the school that you do need to set an example with. But I think the overarching picture is that our role within the community is to help, you know, help be stewards of this art, help guide people to, you know, the far shore of understanding in grappling. So I think in the context of the whole, our job is not to beat up whoever. Our job is to communicate the value of jiu-jitsu. And, you know, you certainly, with all of your merits, you have done enough in your past where I think you should kind of give yourself a break right now and acknowledge that the jiu-jitsu community needs you to play a certain role. And that role isn't necessarily, you know, the technical, you know, the actual doing of the jiu-jitsu. You've done that and you are doing it, but your role is to communicate the value of jiu-jitsu and how to use jiu-jitsu as a tool for personal development. And I think for me, you know, say my body did break down, back to your previous question, and I couldn't train anymore, or even if I didn't want to train with, say, some new 250-pound brown belt that came in because my body was broken down, I'd feel okay with that because I know my contribution to the whole doesn't involve that round or that role that day. It's a much bigger picture, and it's something that our minds, I think, are becoming just as important as our bodies were when we were, you know, solely practitioners that were only training.
Interesting. I really appreciate that viewpoint, Chris. I really, really do. It reminds me of another theme that I've been gaining some illumination on recently. You know, there's a guy who started training around the same time I did, and we have a I wouldn't say a mutual friend. It's a friend of mine that knows him as well. This third party. Let's just call him John. Now, John is a really, really tough human being. He is, he's one of those dudes you spar with him and like you got to go home and take a hot bath afterwards because it's just like, and he's not a young guy either. He's like, I think he's older than myself. He's like 41 or 42, but he's incredibly tough. He's one of those dudes who goes flat out no matter what, and he's skilled. And I remember I was speaking to my buddy who knows John as well, and I said to him, "Man, I don't know how that guy does it. I don't know how he stays so tough and so on the edge." And my buddy just said to me, he said, "Look at what this guy's produced, right? Just look at what he's produced. He hasn't produced any good students. He hasn't produced any affiliated academies. He hasn't published any books. He hasn't put any videos out into the community. He hasn't given anything back. And that's how he stays so tough and so on the edges, because he's so focused on himself, but it come and his own jiu-jitsu and his own ability, but it comes at the cost of the internal focus. So that do you get what I'm saying? It comes at the cost of he's unable to, or he hasn't given back.
Yeah, I'm with you 1,000%. Absolutely. There's an opportunity cost to all of it, right? And I think you have many more roles you have to attend to than being strictly a student. And all the energy you put into making this great podcast and writing books and being a mentor to your students, if you had only put that into grappling, yeah, we could do that. I mean, we'd probably be really broken down and injured, but I think it's an opportunity cost, and you have to really determine what it is that you value and where you're willing to put your finite time.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it. So this is the last thing I'll say on this topic, and then we can move on. But I think one of the reasons why it's been such a struggle for myself, and I have met a few other instructors who've had issues with it as well, is because my good buddy Liam Reznikov, who was a previous guest on the show, he said jiu-jitsu is the only sport in which the coach is expected to be as good as all the players. And if you think about it, it's true. Like if you go to the NBA, you don't expect one of the coaches to be able to just like jump on the court and start like playing and out shooting and with the players. This
That's
is
a great point.
there's no way. It's just not gonna happen. Whereas if you go to the Jiu-Jitsu Academy, it's like, okay, he's the coach, he's gotta be the toughest, best guy. Or that's generally the sentiment. And I think what we have to do is start educating people that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. It can be the case sometimes. If you go to Roger's Academy, he does happen to be the biggest, toughest, best guy, but it's not always the case. And I guess maybe for students, it's like you said, it's seeing how well they can disseminate the art, or how well they can get people to the, as you said, the far shore of understanding, which I thought was an amazing way to put it.
Oh, I appreciate that. I really think that's our role, as instructors. As we're in a very fortunate position, you're right. I mean, unless you're a Hodger Gracie, then you're in a league of your own. But I think the goal of every teacher should be that they create students that surpass them. And it's a weird thing. It's like you create. One of my instructors mentioned this. As an instructor, if you do a good job, you create the weapons with which you destroy yourself. And that's a really interesting way to look at it.
That's awesome. I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's really, really cool. You know, it's I've kind of struggled internally with the idea of having my own academy. I mean, I have several affiliated schools, but none of them is my specific home academy. So I've realized that for me, that is one of those things I've been running from for so long. The idea of being in a fixed location, having my own academy. And I'm starting to feel that maybe it is the best thing for me, and that I will, because I was teaching the other day, teaching at one of my affiliated academies, and I was just sitting there like showing this white belt something, and I realized it's such a pleasure, bro. It is such a pleasure to,
That's
you know
awesome.
what I mean? When you show someone something, and you see that look of recognition on their face, and then you see them improve, it's such a pleasure. But here's the thing, Chris. And this again, this might be me thinking too much. I'm very apprehensive and concerned about turning that pleasure into a duty and thus having all the pleasure drained from it. And any insights you can give me into how to avoid that, I'd appreciate.
That is an amazing question. So a little backstory, because I felt that. So I have been training since about 2008, and probably around 2012 and 2013, my teacher, Professor Almeida, gave me the opportunity to be the head instructor at his new school that he opened in Newtown, Pennsylvania. And I won the lottery. I remember receiving that phone call in my apartment, just knowing that I never have to work another day in my life. You know, I'm going to do jujitsu for the rest of my life. But after you do jujitsu every day and you are bringing injuries into class, you know, when your lower back hurts and you're teaching the third class of the day and it's the end of the week. And yeah, it can become a job. So when I turned 30 last summer, I took 3 months off and I went on a road trip across America just by myself. I wanted to see all the national parks and just kind of reassess and really determine what I really wanted out of the next phase of life. I felt myself moving into, you know, the next phase. And I recognized that, you know, after 3 months of being alone in the woods, that I wanted the life I'd been living all along, that, you know, I wanted to teach jiu-jitsu full time and that it wasn't work. You know, no matter, I think we have the ability to grow familiar with anything, no matter how great it is, and we kind of miss the beauty in it. So for me, going away for a few months really helped solidify that it is an absolute gift to teach jiu-jitsu, and jiu-jitsu is the most beautiful, complex, fun thing that I have ever experienced. And I do want to teach this for the rest of my life. And I would say, you know, yeah, there's, when you open up your own school, there's the whole business side, but I always kind of look at it as, you know, my environment will compensate me if I'm providing value for them. So we can just continue to serve and love through jiu-jitsu and focus on the loving and the serving, the money will kind of take care of itself. So for me, I'm actually opening up my own school at the end of this month, and I'm super excited for it. And it's definitely, yeah, it's a new venture in business. But for me, I'm just looking at it as it's a new chance to build a new community and just serve as much as I can. And the better servant we are to our students, you know, the finances will take care of itself.
I like that way of thinking. And one of I just had a chat with Roy Dean, a private chat recently. He's such a cool guy. I really love talking to him. And, you know, I was discussing the idea of getting my own place and the same reluctances I've shared with you, I shared with him. And he said, man, your academy, if you do it properly, it can be your refuge from the world. It can be your laboratory, it can be like the place where you rest, it can be, you know, the place where you go have fun. It's like your own little space, you know, your own little, there's not a word, I don't have the correct word that I'm looking for, but you get what I'm saying? It's kind of like, and I think for me, that's one of the things I have to do when I create an academy is I want it to be, I've got these crazy ideas, but like one of them is I want those, a couple of big old school arcade game cabinets, but with, nice. I want one of them running Mortal Kombat and one running Street Fighter 2. And I want like a flotation tank, and I want to have amazing artwork all over the walls. And like, I'm just super excited about it. I've got a pretty grand vision. I'll have you down, I'm sure, one day to teach a seminar, Chris.
I would love that. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Chris, I wanted to ask you, to tell us a little bit about some of your books. So the book that one of my buddies has been raving to me about is The Tao of Jiu-Jitsu. Is that the latest one?
Oh, I appreciate that. That would be the second to last one. The most recent one was called On Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, and there was a previous one to both of those. Is that correct?
Yes, there were two My Mastery books. One was My Mastery, Learning to Live Through Jiu-Jitsu. And then the second volume was My Mastery, Continued Education Through Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay, so if someone wants to start with your books, which I'm guessing they should start with the My Mastery series, or where should they go?
I would say if you are first starting out in training, because there's not too much literature out there about jiu-jitsu, yeah, either of the first two, the My Mastery series, they're pretty straightforward. Just, you know, my interpretation of these are the things that worked well for me when I was from white belt through black.
Nice.
But the most recent book, On Jiu-Jitsu, I would really hope that if anyone was going to read one book, it would be that one, because that book is, you know, why jiu-jitsu is so important for your soul. And I think that's something that, regardless of where you're at on the continuum of experience, we can all relate and understand how significant our training is.
Interesting. That's cool. I just saw the cover on Amazon and I was kind of pissed off because I'm writing another book on jiu-jitsu, and my idea for a cover, it was exactly yours, which is like that really cool picture of the belt. And I was like, oh, damn, he's taking that. It looks really cool. And by the sound of it, it sounds really cool. So I think I'm going to have to read that soon. So, Chris, tell me what has been your biggest... achievement isn't the right word. What has been the best experience you've had, the best single experience you've had during jiu-jitsu? And it could be a competition victory, or it could be seeing a change in someone else's life, or anything you can think of that comes to mind as your best experience.
Yeah, I would say my best experience has been the people. You know how within every team, you kind of form a team within the team, like your really special peer group, that you two kind of hold each other to a different standard. So coming up, I had a core group of guys who we all wanted the same things at jiu-jitsu. We all wanted to apply the same effort and attention. And just the people, the relationships, you know, the guys you train with every day. You guys understand each other a lot better than, say, anyone else in the rest of your daily life. So I would say that I've had the incredible honor of being, you know, my teacher's student, and just to have access to the direct source of jiu-jitsu, you know, right through the Gracie lineage, and have the opportunity to practice that with people I care so much about. And really, you know, we call each other brother. That's almost a commonplace term, but that's significant. You know, you really do become the brothers of your teammates. So I would say the people has been the best experience.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. That's so true. So true. I do this gratitude journal, sit down, write everything I'm thankful for. And one of the things I say is I'm grateful for my friends, and then I try to run through them in my mind, and the vast majority of them are people I've met through training in some form or another. And it's such a gift, man. It's such a gift. I'm so thankful for it. So I have to ask, what has been the biggest disappointment for you on your jiu-jitsu journey?
Oh, that's an amazing question. I would say at the time, the biggest disappointments would be never winning any tournament of note. You know, I was mildly successful in very regional tournaments, but I competed at Worlds once as a purple belt and did not win that. And but those are, you know, in the big scheme of things, for, you know, what I hope my contribution to jiu-jitsu will be, it's not a competition. I know that. I don't think I'm athletic enough or willing to commit enough time enough to really further the jiu-jitsu cause in that way. So when it comes to the biggest disappointment, I would say, honestly, I don't have one. Like, that would even be a stretch to say that. I think even the injuries, right? Injuries, as you talked about earlier, that's always tough, you know, that I'm 31 years old and I can't get up without making old man noises, but it's worth it. You know, I'd rather be in pain and do what I love to do than be in pain and sit in a cubicle from 9 to 5. So,
well, you know that expression, right? What is it? Pain is temporary, glory lasts forever, and chicks dig scars. So I get it. You know that what you mentioned about not having won a tournament of note, I completely understand where you're coming from. You know, I've won some good national level tournaments and some ADCC qualifiers and things like that, but I never won the worlds, and I always wanted to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there was a time when that literally was all I thought about. Nothing. I didn't think about anything else when I was like 28. That was all I thought about. And a guy said to me once, he said, who won the purple belt middleweight world title in 2001? And I was like, I don't know. Like, he said, yeah, no one knows. And he said, who won the black belt middleweight title in 2001? I was like, I don't know. I mean, I could find it on the internet, but, you know, with very few exceptions, it's such a fleeting thing. And, you know, I'm just trying to put it in words, because I think it is something cool to strive for, and I'm not trying to put the damper on anyone who's competing. I know my buddy Nick Raphael is going to go fight in the World Masters, and I'm sure he's going to do well. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, You cannot define yourself by that. There's far better ways to define your worth in jiu-jitsu. One of them is how good of a training partner are you? You know,
yeah.
Because it's being a good training partner is a very, very nuanced, it's a very fine line. If you don't train hard enough or push your opponent hard enough, you're doing him a disservice. But if you go too hard, you injure him, or you can cause injuries, or you can just be a dickhead. And being a good training partner is an important thing. I can think of some of the guys I train with. Like I love training with him, and then there's other dudes I'm just like, I just don't want to go anywhere near that guy. You know, he might have won like 10 medals, but I just don't want to be on the mat with that dude. And like you said before, teaching is another important one. How well do you give back to people, and how well do you look after your body as well? And how long is your body going to last? Because you could probably place at a large competition if you took a year out, took a fuckload of steroids, you know, did CrossFit 5 times a week and just burnt away like 10 years of your life energy,
yep,
and gave it everything you had on that day. You could probably medal in a big competition, but what is the cost, right? And no one's going to remember it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about that, you know, like we both said, you know, we're already broken down at a relatively young age. You know, I want to have a family someday, and I want to play with my kids someday. And I'm not going to tell my daughter that, sorry, dad can't play with you because his back hurts, but look at this medal in the back closet that I won 20 years ago. It's just, that's not the life that I want to have. Now, if that's something that you aspire toward and you find purpose in that, I think that's amazing. You know, I guess we're both speaking purely for ourselves. That is not a trade that I am willing to make anymore. And it doesn't sound like you are either.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fine line, because as I said to a buddy yesterday, we did a good sparring session, and I just said, man, there's nothing like it. You know, there's lifting weights or yoga or swimming or running, or there's just nothing comes close to a good match. And when I say a good match, I don't mean like an incredibly tough one. I mean like a 7 out of 10, you know, like a tough match, but one in which no one gets injured, but you know, you push yourself, and at the end of it, you just feel like, man, that was just awesome. And there's nothing like it. You know, that's one of the things I don't want to say I'm worried, but it's one of the reasons I'm so fucking careful with my jiu-jitsu training and my training partners, is because I know there's only a finite number of these left.
Yes.
And, you know, now that number might be 500, right? It might be a high number, but I know that, like, I mean, there's a dude at Rogers Academy, really, really good jiu-jitsu player. Phenomenal, like elite. His name's Muchik, and he's from Mongolia. Interesting story. His parents are circus acrobats from Mongolia, and I think he did a bit of he came to train here in London, and the guy was tearing everything up. He was really, really good, and then he got a severe knee injury, a very severe knee injury, and this guy is like out. I mean, I don't know when he's coming back or if he's coming back. And to me, I'm always walking that edge between, I want my jiu-jitsu to be dynamic and and effective and real, but at the same time, I want to try to maintain my body for as long as possible.
Yeah.
So it's this tightrope that we walk, and I think that is one of your duties as a martial artist. Is to, you know, I speak about it in Soul of Jiu-Jitsu and Spirit of Jiu-Jitsu. It's kind of like maintaining the vehicle, or like looking after the sword and keeping the sword polished and oiled. And, you know, that's your job. Like, if you, let's say you're a samurai and you're given this amazing katana, right? And then you go and start whacking away at a wall, or like chopping down trees with it, you know? And that's kind of, you're neglecting your duty as that warrior, which is to protect your sword.
Absolutely.
Does it make sense to you what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You get it right. Yeah.
We're the sculptor and the clay, right?
Yes.
It's one thing. And I think, so I haven't gotten to tell you this yet. When I was training, you know, years ago, when your Stuart Cooper film came out, I absolutely loved it. I downloaded it, just the audio file, and I used to listen to it on the way to training for like a couple of weeks, like every day. And you talked about, I think it was a Sanskrit term, lipa, right? Play. Mm-hmm. And we forget we play jujitsu. We are jujitsu players. And I know this is one of my greatest weaknesses, is I get so caught up in trying to become that I forget to be. And at the most fundamental level, you know, jujitsu is fun and we do it with people we love. And I think you can get so caught up in these alternative goals that we stop playing. And for me, I want to be like the 70-year-old dude who's playing jujitsu. And we need to take certain steps now in our training to make sure we can facilitate that end.
And Agreed, Chris. That's very well put, bud. Very, very well put. So back to you, Chris. Your objective now is you're going to be opening your own school in where exactly?
So I'm going to be opening up in Florence, New Jersey. That's south central New Jersey.
Damn. I mean, that's basically where Sopranos took place, yeah?
Look at that. That's where it is, yeah.
I actually, awesome. Is your spot going to be next to Satriali's Pork Store?
I assume that's so, but I hope.
So you've been a teacher before, but you haven't owned your own place, is that correct?
Correct, yes. This is a brand new endeavor.
Oh, good for you. And when is the opening date?
So we should be getting in the building at the end of next week, and we're hoping to have classes by the end of August. So by the back to school September, we should be rocking.
Awesome. And you guys are doing a big opening party, or how are you gonna launch officially?
Yeah, so we're gonna start out. I'm very fortunate. I grew up in Hamilton, New Jersey, which is 15 minutes up the road, and I moved back home after college, and a lot of my friends still live here. So my hope is that I'm gonna get a lot of my friends who've never trained jiu-jitsu to come help me out and start when the school opens to help me kind of build the program. So we're going to have a lot of grassroots with a lot of people I love. And then we're doing minimal advertising and such. But basically, once we get going, we'll have classes. And then about a month after that, we'll have a big grand opening. And we'll invite all my other friends with their own schools and just have a big celebration for jiu-jitsu.
Oh, man, that's so cool. That sounds really cool. I'm sure, I mean, I know if I was a guy training in New Jersey or living nearby, and I heard this podcast and heard how eloquent you are and the passion you have for jiu-jitsu, I'd definitely come down and check it out. And I'm really hoping anyone listening to this does. Chris, my man, so before we wrap this up, I just want to double confirm that if people want to get your books, which are on jiu-jitsu, the Tao of Jiu-Jitsu and My Mastery, they can head over to Amazon and just search your name, Chris Matakis, and those will come up. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That'd be perfect.
Okay. And the web address, or do you have a homepage for your new academy that's opening up?
Yes. The academy's the website is matakisbjj.com.
Okay, great. Chris, my brother, what a pleasure. I love it when the meeting of the minds happens like that. And I really felt speaking to you that I was speaking to a kindred spirit, and it was a great pleasure for me. Thank you so much for sharing with both me and the audience your wisdom.
Oh, please. Thank you for having me. And again, honestly, Nick, thank you for all you do for jiu-jitsu, man. It's awesome. And I think the more we can work together and the more we can communicate how valuable this art is, the more people can benefit from it. And, you know, the better this world will be.
For sure. All right, my brother, keep the faith. Chat to you later.
All right, Nick. Talk soon. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's definitely my kind of person. What a cool guy Chris is. And it was really fun to speak to him. And I just can really feel the sincerity in his voice. And I know that even though I haven't read his books, I'm sure that they're going to be fantastic pieces of work. And they've gone right to the top of my list of things to read. I also know that if you're in the New Jersey area, whether you're living there or just traveling there, you should definitely go check this guy out, because I don't think there'll be many people that would put as much heart and soul into teaching jiu-jitsu as Chris would. But guys, thank you for listening. Once again, if you want to support Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood, and in particular this show, the best thing you can do is head on over to one of our sponsors, the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store being one of them. And remember, if you type in the code podcast, you'll get 10% off any of our gis, our belts, rash guards, hoodies, t-shirts, patches, or stickers. Gis in particular are amazing. The Seeker ghee we have is, in my opinion, the coolest ghee on the market. It's got a full color, high definition sublimated print of one of Cameron Gray's artworks on the inside, on the lining. You actually have to see it to believe it. I don't think there's anything else on the market like it. So head on over to store.jujitsubrother.com and check it out and get 10% off by using the code podcast. And also, the sponsor is ButcherBox. You know, when I started doing the show, I knew I'd have to have sponsors to cover some of the costs. But one of the deals I made with myself is that I'd never promote anything I didn't believe in. And I really do believe in what ButcherBox is doing. They deliver the highest quality, free-range, grass-fed meat to your door. It's all meat from animals that have not been tortured or treated inhumanely and reared on feedlots and other disgusting practices like that. And if you can't afford to eat meat of that quality, and I say that it's not even that expensive, especially when you get it through ButcherBox. If you have the means to get meat like that, I think you owe it to yourself and the world to do so. The way meat comes to our tables through the regular factory methods really isn't right. It's just not right if you're a loving, kind human being who cares about nature and animals. You cannot condone that, even though sometimes you have to eat meat that comes from lesser sources. So head on over to ButcherBox, use the code JJB15, as in Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood 15, and you'll get $15 off your first order, and they'll send to your door the best, absolute best quality grass-fed beef, chicken, and pork. And you'll also get free bacon when you use that code, free organic bacon. That's it for this week, guys. I am trying really hard to get Roger's episode number 10 guest. Obviously, he's in high demand for everything, so it's kind of difficult to nail him down, but hopefully we're gonna have him for our 10th episode next week. If not, we'll have another cool guest and we'll get Roger on another time. In the meanwhile, guys, train hard and train smart. I'll see you guys on the mats.